and welcome back to Read This Comic Before You Die, where we will talk about, do you know what? Probably talk about comic books.
What?
I know,
what?
Radical. But not just any old comic books. These are the comic books that we feel should be in your collection. The essential. The leather-back. Yeah.
You're trying to work it back to that wrong way.
No, I'm trying to avoid it. I can't think of anything else to say there. That's my knee, sorry.
It is your knee. Yeah. I can tell you're excited about this one. Your knee's making the monitor shake.
And it's one I'm not actually leading with this one, it's you.
It is me. So pipe down.
Oh, we should probably introduce ourselves as well, really. So, hi, this is one of your co-hosts, Jude Taylor.
I thought you were going to say, hi, it's your boy.
Oh, please do.
Do not me.
Please let that
can't
be
get away with
what's annoying. Up, guys?
Yeah.
Smash
hey,
that.
Can I do my YouTuber voice? Hey, guys.
What's that?
I don't know. Is that what the you kids do these YouTube days? I've watched YouTube videos.
You say this.
Obviously not the ones you watch.
No.
To be honest, at the minute, I'm just watching Bloodborne speedruns. Big, exciting times in my life.
speak well, you know, it's on theme. It's kind of gothy.
Yeah.
That's where we're going. Who are you?
I'm Lucy James.
Good.
Bloodborne fan.
Bloodborne Secret. Fan and token goth. Of the
I
podcast.
Was a goth. Well,
were you a goth?
I'm... oh, dear. Yeah.
Oh, no, this
is it.
Before I even introduce myself, let's slam on the brakes and let's dive into this.
You almost grabbed your tea and like, girl.
Girl!
Yeah, when I was like 13, 14, I grew really good friends with like the local like goth gang.
This is Nottingham goth gang.
Nottingham? No, Newcastle would go to the Green.
It's because of an N, sorry. It's up north, I don't know.
Nottingham.
No.
I mean Newcastle, I consider everything south.
Fair.
No, so we would hang out at the Green.
Right.
I'm so glad there's only one photo of me from this time exists. and you can't really see me, but my hair was like down to, God, like my middle of my upper arm. Like super long hair that was really scraggly. I didn't wear makeup other than like dark eyeliner. Yeah. Well, massive trousers.
Yes.
Like, you could fit both legs in one, pretty much. And I would wear, like, Slipknot hoodies and...
My Chemical Romance.
I did like My Chemical Romance, but not to the extent where I had clothing. The one band I would have clothing of would be Slipknot all the time. Like, a majority was Slipknot.
Wow.
Never have pegged you for one of them.
Someone said the other day that Iowa is 17 years old, and I...
It is.
God!
And you push your fingers into your...
Big goth boy, that was from the third album. That was from Subliminal Verses.
Wait, did you have a goth persona? Did you go by a different name? Were you like, call me...
Oh, no, I did!
Wow!
Oh, this is the best podcast ever!
But it was on... forum for The Sims.
You are a shit goth.
Oh, this is a gift. Well, you've taken us this far.
I was going to call it a demon child.
Brilliant.
Anyway, I'm Neil Gortz, and you're listening to Read This Comic Before You Die. As you probably gathered by the title today, we talk about
that?
It's my crow. You should know you were a goth demon child.
I regret this so much.
Today, we talk about the crow.
Le crow.
Le crow. There is a French crow.
Oh my god.
But we'll come to that.
Okay.
All right.
So speaking of you being very little, let's start at the beginning. How old were you in the year of our Lord 1989?
You weren't even
Mine's
born.
Mine's two.
Fucking hell.
You know this because when we went...
You knew!
No, because when we went to see Terminator 2, I said, when I was born, the movie that was number one at the time was Silence of the Lambs going into Terminator.
Right, no, we can't be Shanghai. We're gonna come back to Terminator 2.
Okay, so
Terminator
1989... Minus two.
Right.
I was 16. You were...
Yet to be...
You were nine?
Yeah.
No, you were... Hang on, you were 82, 83?
I was 81.
Okay, right, yeah, that's close. Eight or nine. Too young to read The Crow, Neil.
Too young to read The Crow.
It's for adults.
My journey into The Crow doesn't come into it until the movie, which there's really no way to talk about The Crow without talking about the movie as well. But we'll come to that. We'll come to that. Anyway, sad note. Sad note. So the writer of The Crow, James O'Barr, tragically, his fiancée was killed by a drunk driver. Girlfriend, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, shouldn't drop fiancée. You automatically start romanticising things when it comes to The Crow, and we'll get into that. So that was not great for him. And as a coping mechanism, he poured his artistic talents into creating The Crow. And basically he channeled his loss and his anguish into this comic. So The Crow debuted in 1989. Sorry, I'm shaking. And became what we like to call a cult classic. So much so that in the space of 5 years, we had the movie The Crow, Kukraw. Yes, which tragically led to the loss of life of Brandon Lee, its titular star. It was billed as darker than The Bat, was the strapline.
Darker than the what?
The Bat. Oh. So 1989, 2 years before you were a wink in the milkman's eye, we had Tim Burton's Batman.
Oh my God, it's almost 30 years. Shit in Henry.
In fact, by the time The Crow came out, we'd had Batman Returns.
Yeah.
So believe it or not, so the Batman movies are amazing.
Great.
But Tim Burton would be the first to admit, he did admit that he'd never read a comic before when he'd taken this up.
Kevin Smith has a very good takedown of Tim Burton.
He does.
With regards to this, yeah.
He does.
So, like something.
In what way? Is it saying he doesn't believe him?
No, as in Tim Burton had a very public... he was just shitting on comic books, basically.
How dare you?
But like very, very publicly and very strangely, given the two comic book movies that he's done. And Kevin Smith said something about... Oh, what was it? It was like... Yeah, because anyone who made Batman Returns has clearly never read a comic book or something like that. Like, Kevin Smith, like, laid into him. And it was something to do with the Superman movie as well.
Yeah.
I can't remember the exact details, but I remember Kevin Smith getting really mad about it.
Because he wrote, was it going to be called Superman Lives?
Yes.
With Nick Cage. So he wrote that, and was Burton going to direct that?
He was involved in some respects, yeah.
I think that's how they started butting heads.
Okay. Yeah. Batarangs at dawn.
Demon Child will be having none of it. Anyway, believe it or not, although we've come to regard 89 Batman and Batman Returns as great fun films, at the time, they were kind of mixed in the comic book world. Mm. A lot of people were like, this is amazing. Here's Batman up on the big screen. We've not seen Batman since the Adam West days. Mm. This is brilliant. On the other hand, it was kind of hokey and had Prince in the soundtrack, which, I mean, that's a plus in my book, but...
I had the album.
Rebought the album.
I had the pitch disc.
Yeah. Oh!
I saw the guitar in the flesh.
You did?
The Prince exhibit. It's quite a moment.
Wait till our spin-off Prince podcast. But that's for another day. That's for another day. So, yeah, so... Darker Than the Bat is how The Crow movie was pitched, basically to sort of tap into this growing cult fandom that The Crow comic had, and these sort of disillusioned comic book fans were hopefully going to get involved in this goth masterpiece. And along came The Crow movie, and that became, indeed, a cult hit. Spoiler warning, you've probably seen The Crow. If you want to go back and watch it off the strength of this podcast, don't.
It hasn't aged well at all, has it?
It's not so much that it hasn't aged, it's just no one has went back and touched it up for modern day home cinema. So the model work is very shonky.
But then also, because Brandon Lee died before they'd finished the movie, so there are some scenes they had to kind of rework, and there was some slightly ropey, like, fate, I don't know what the technical term is, but they put his face on someone's body.
Yeah, some of the early digital pioneering his face on stuff, and they sort of had to cut around the ending. But yeah, very tragically died during the making of it, which only amplified The Crow as a cult classic. Mm. From there, we had The Crow, City of Angels.
Never seen it.
No, never seen it.
It's a treat.
Is that with Fairuza Balk?
That's the one with Iggy Pop.
Oh.
Oh, see, I'm an Iggy Pop fan.
Yeah, see? Yeah. See, you like that? Iggy Pop was in a spate of movies where he played wrong-ins for a distinct while. Iggy Pop's in there. Ian Dury's in there.
Ooh. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't so good. Has an amazing soundtrack, as does the first Crow.
Okay.
And by then, there was a third movie that came out.
Oh, yikes.
That passed me by. I didn't. I knew there was a second one. I didn't know there was a third. I know they're trying to do a new one as well, aren't they? But there's been loads of...
Bauer's backed out now.
Yeah.
There was also a TV series, Stairway to Heaven. Our boy Edward Furlong, bringing it back to T2, was the Crow.
What on a TV?
Money.
What on a TV series?
I think he might have been the third one.
Oh, okay.
That sort of like led into the TV series. Yeah. But at some point, because it was such a cult classic, you will have heard of The Crow.
Mm.
And this is what we're here to talk about today.
Mm.
The Crow book. It has went through many hands and many iterations and many publishers. You'll probably be able to find a collected version of it. Whether it's the same one that I read, I don't know. Basically, it would go from one collected edition, and then it would go out of print, and James O'Barr would be like, I've never actually heard him speak. People are like, I've got 60-odd pages of stuff that couldn't make it in the other one that was cut for like timing and pace, and then out would come another edition. Anyway, it is talked about as it is ranked very highly in as one of the best black and white comics. There is no colour in The Crow. But it's quite an amazing story, and it is self-contained, and I think that's the beginning and ending of why it is a cult classic.
And it's a classic revenge story, right? So it's, if I remember right, it's like is he ever named?
He is named as Eric.
Yeah, so Eric and his
girlfriend Shelley.
Yeah, are murdered, right? But he comes back as a spirit of vengeance of sorts.
Essentially, yes. It never goes too deeply into it.
Yeah.
Basically, you discover over the course of The Crow that Eric and Shelley, a very happy young couple, break down. And a car stops by them, and they sort of think, oh, great, we're going to be helped here. And they're not. They are murdered. He's shot in the head and paralyzed, and has to watch the grim unfortunate fate of his girlfriend, and then later dies in the hospital, and then suddenly a year later he's back on the streets, followed by a little crow that's telling him where he can track down those that done him wrong. So yeah, it is a straight up revenge story where he takes down these gang of criminals that did him wrong in spectacular style.
They did do some other spin-offs, right? I think comic-wise.
The Crow has had a number of spin-offs. And because it grew in cult status, it sort of became flavor of the week. So it would be like, this week, I am a Native American who was killed by racists, and this is why I'm out for an avenge.
Right,
or
right.
I am actually the first one that came out was a female. I want to say forestry. I think she was a small town sheriff.
Okay,
that was like bumped off by some rednecks. But it's had lots of. There would be lots of like little spin-offs. The trick with The Crow is, though, there's like once they've had revenge, that's it. Your time's up. The Crow moves on to someone else and you go off to rest. So you never really get a returning Crow character. It's just the persona of the Crow transferred onto someone else. But it is a great revenge-ripping adventure. And it's interesting to read, knowing that so much of James O'Barr's gut-wrenching emotion is being played out in this story. You know, it's what he I don't want to say impotent rage, but you know, that's how he's processing everything. Like, you can see the anger in his internal thought process of how he personifies, you know, this cruel fate onto this rather horrid drug gang and the destruction that they reap. All one big metaphor, but very digestible. The standalone collected Crow is a great read. I thoroughly, thoroughly recommend it.
I did have a collection, I think it was early 90s, I think just before the movie came out. But you're right, I do remember they kept like reissuing it as time went on.
Yeah. It's passed through so many different publishers for various reasons. There's been several attempts to reboot it. Like we were talking about, there was like a French version. Literally just played out in France.
Interesting. With the Eiffel Tower in the background.
Yeah, I think the last time they were going to reboot it is it was going to be a television series, not starred by but produced by Rod Zombie, and it was going to be The Crow 2037.
Oh, God.
And it's just there is something about this. Like, I get it. Like, the revenge motif is powerful, and it's sort of a gothic fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is and it isn't. Like, when you read the actual Crow itself, like, a lot of the look of it is of its day. Like, that's very much the music and the stylings that James O'Barr was seeing on TV. But, like, the music that the character Eric's listening to, there's a lot of, like, Secret Garden by Bruce Springsteen and stuff like that. It's not what you would associate. Like, by the time the film rolls around, they've, like, packaged this up into a neat gothic fairy tale.
Am I right thinking, is there like Joy Division lyrics in the graphic novel as well? Because that's obviously referenced in the movie, because Nine Inch Nails did a cover of a Joy Division song for the soundtrack as
That's
well.
Right.
There's and The Cure on the soundtrack. It was great. I only heard the first soundtrack. That movie came out, I absolutely loved the movie.
Yeah.
Literally bought the t-shirt, bought the DVD, you know, bought the CD, you know, sort of went full on.
I think Joy Division's covered in the second movie as well.
Right.
But like, yeah, it's not the gothic fantasy, but you can see like in an era of like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, this is a story for our people. I'm not sure it was ever intended to be, but that's the audience it got. And because of that, I think that's why it's sort of been pigeonholed into like a cult classic. But it definitely deserves some room on your shelf.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'll fancy rereading it again. That was a funny year when it came out, because in the same year as The Mask came out with Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Which two great comic book movies for different reasons. And both, I think they were both box office smashes. I know The Mask certainly was, I think.
Yeah,
The Mask was.
I'm pretty sure The Crow was as well.
Yeah, but like they made The Crow, they made The Mask like a lot more friendly and
did you ever read the original Mask comics?
Yeah,
they were amazing. They were like dark,
yeah, and The Mask is one of my favorite films as a kid.
Oh yeah, there's not a lot of the dark.
There was an element of it when you kind of watch it back now, like some of the clips that go on, you're like, oh god, like woke 2018, this would never get made.
Yeah, but the whole idea, like we should definitely talk about The Mask in another one, but but like when so you have like the kind of this take on the Tex Avery cartoons where you know like the coyote or whatever will get like an exhaust pipe, it'll swallow exhaust pipe, and you see his body shape. There's a scene where he basically like is his name Ipkiss? Is it Stanley Ipkiss? Yeah, I think he's getting screwed over by like a garage mechanic, and so he puts on the mask and goes back, and the police find this mechanic with an exhaust in his body, and it's kind of like, he is definitely dead, you know, it's kind of like, it's not like comedy thing, it's literally like, yeah, his body's completely disformed, it's like,
yeah.
So I remember reading that after I saw the movie and going like, that's not what I expected, but no. I like
Jim
this.
Jim Carrey, no!
Yeah, it's the equal cursing and blessing of Jim Carrey attached to it, I think.
Mm.
But yeah, like very, very similar premise, like that's how the Crow was teased, certainly back in 1989, it's like, here is a hero who's prepared to do anything and like really has no limits of what they will do.
I think that era when the movie came out was very much a case of, you know, that we can show that comic books can be adult, you know, can do adult comic book movies as well, which kind of There was a... I think after that we had, like, Spawn, which...
Ooh.
Good soundtrack, but that's all I can say about it.
Blade?
That came later, I think. Yeah. That came... 97, 98, I think you're right, 98, yeah.
Yeah, it was an 88 one. But yeah, like it's definitely one of my favorites. It was, I think, probably what got me, what derailed my my goth vampire days. And I was like, oh, here is something that I can super crystal focalize on.
Did you buy a big black trench coat?
I didn't go down the sort of, like, to be a goth in Scotland, you literally just had to wear a black t-shirt and jeans. Like, we didn't really go, like, because licensed goods took so long to come through. Like, we wouldn't have had Slipknot hoodies for 5 years until after. Wow. Yeah, so.
Missing out.
Well, you know, import and export doesn't work the same up there. So yeah, I had goth leanings, but it was more sort of a case of, like, this is merch heaven. Like, yeah, every time you went into, like, a poster shop, even an HMV or whatever, like, you could guarantee there would be a new Crow poster there to take. So it definitely found its audience. I'm not sure it was the right audience for the comic book, but the movie definitely struck a chord with people.
You've just reminded me, I just remembered I've got two confessions to make. I had two choice pieces of Crow merchandise.
Sweet.
Because I was working at a comic shop at the time, and so we got to see, like, the catalogues coming through, what's coming out. So I was like, oh, these two items I'm going to tell you about. I was like, oh yeah, totally going to wear those.
Wearing them? Oh, I thought it was just going to be the action figure.
No.
So one thing I wore a lot around that time, this is like 94, right? So I wore a Crow bandana. I wore a bandana a lot.
But you know what? If you still had that, I'd own it. I don't know if I'd wear it, but I'd be proud to.
I'd give it to my cousin. Like, apparently she wouldn't take it off. She wore it for like about a year or so after that.
Yeah,
but the other thing, which I'm more embarrassed about, was a Crow tank top, like a vest top.
Oh, God.
Didn't have the physique for it. I remember it remained in the drawer for a good few years because it was too baggy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, classic merchandise, mate.
Don't make him like that anymore.
That's
great. What a book and what a film. Like, there are discrepancies sort of between the two. Like, they very much tidied the book up to be a more functional film.
Well, they drop, isn't it? That's something called the Skull Cowboys in the book.
Yeah,
but it's on the extras on the DVD. I remember where it was like not very good special effects. Yeah. It was literally a really bad animatronic.
Yeah.
Dummy. And it just kind of tonally, it just doesn't work in the movie.
Mm. No, it really doesn't. The movie's just... Sorry, the book is more... Because it's like a sort of drug gang criminal enterprise thing, it's much more anarchic and chaotic and just unfair, which is meant to sort of represent, I guess, the sort of whole randomness of the drunk driver and whatnot, whereas the movie's more coached into, like, they still do the same bad things, but it's a very deliberate means for this criminal empire, like, establishing territory and running things legitimately and you know, hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then, of course, they sort of ditch the Joy Division and the Bruce Springsteen to just go with this techno-goth goth noir. Yeah. Like, literally the bad guy Top Dollar in the comic is one of the first ones to die, who's like in charge of the drug gang, and he's bumped off by literally just Eric tapping on the window, and he sticks his head out going, what's that banging, shot through the head. Whereas opposed to in the movie, played by Michael Winscott, who is just amazing in this film. Like,
he's got voice of gravel, right?
Wears a big ruffled shirt, which, you know, even in the mid-90s is completely out of place. Like, it's just goth, like a waistcoat and a ruffled shirt for no other reason just than this is a goth fantasy.
Yeah.
He's running his criminal empire, and to get to him, the crew's got to literally go through hundreds. Like, the scene, I believe, where Brandon Lee unfortunately met his fate is literally him standing on a massive boardroom table where he's surrounded by thugs all pointing guns at him. You know, very pre-John Wick.
Yeah.
And literally, you know, is shot 1,000 times and still manages to take them all down. All to the soundtrack of My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. It's a wonderful piece of cinema, but, like, it would not exist in the same plane as the graphic novel.
Right.
And of course, you know, it ends with a sword fight on top of a church where
Of course.
Yeah. Where Michael Winscott has a sword.
Of course. Yes.
Has a sword. And I think Brandon Lee's using like a wind chime. Not a wind chime. What's the word I'm looking for?
The one that's on top of a...
Yeah, it tells you which way the wind's...
a wind vane.
Wind vane. Thank you very much. Yeah. Yeah, it's all...
Weather vane.
We got there eventually.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very sugar-coated into like this... Sugar-coated is probably the wrong term, but it's very much funneled into this gothic fantasy. And for a while that was great, but I think it both doomed it to just live in its cult status. Mm. Much like the Crow. Just once Eric's done, he goes back to the ground and back to whatever. Tragically, no Brandon Lee, no continuing sequel. So,
do you think they would have done one, do you think, if he was still alive? Because as you were saying, it's literally the character itself has his revenge and that's it, it's done.
Yeah.
In a parallel universe, do you think they would have tried and got him back to do a sequel?
No, I think they would have definitely went with another story and another character. Right. There's no real way around that. And by all accounts, I don't think Brandon Lee was certainly looking for his big break.
Yeah.
But he was more sort of, he didn't want to play a role where he had to wear, you know, like loads of face makeup and whatnot. He was...
Right. Wanted to be him.
Yeah, he wanted to be him. Much more of his roles was like fresh-faced cop. He was sort of like a sort of burgeoning Keanu Reeves in Speed. That was the sort of roles he was going for. But this was a chance to make it break. And unfortunately, it did not end how anyone wanted.
Exactly.
But yeah, I thoroughly recommend you track down The Crow. If you like that, there are a number of sequels that vary in quality. They tend to be a bit more high fantasy than the movies. I couldn't in good conscience tell you to watch the sequels, but they do have amazing soundtracks if you're into that era of music.
Fair.
Yeah.
Mm. Get on Spotify.
Get on iTunes, mate. I had to...
top dollar.
Yay. Oh, that's a nice throwback.
Top dollar
and Demon Child.
Whenever, if they bring back CB radios, that's going to be our... God. You're listening to Top Dollar and the Demon Child.
And on that note,
that was The Crow. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to find us, you can find us at BAM Comic Cast on Twitter.
And Facebook.
And on Facebook. You can drop us an email to
BAM@deadgoodmedia.com.
And if you want to find us individually, I am Neil Gortz with a Z.
I'm at Stunami.
Until then.